This is Alex. I'm from Boston.
Hello, this is Jackie, and I'm from Houston.
Hey, this is Rahul from Stanford.
And we are the Premier Chefs.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Premier Chelsea, source for all things Premier League, but starting with Chelsea first. And today, I am joined by a very special guest. We've saved the best for the last, the final day of 2023. I am joined by Siyun. He's a Chelsea fan. He's been analyzing games and is very well known around the Chelsea fan base on Twitter. So welcome.
Thanks so much, Rahul. That was an intro that I probably didn't expect, and you're too kind, and I'm happy to be on. Really happy.
You deserve it, my friend. I know you and I have been talking for some time now, and we've been trying to plan to bring you on, so I'm glad we could get it in and get it done in 2023. So let's get started. Let's learn a little bit more about you. How did you become a Chelsea fan?
Anytime I remember that, it's quite a story because in my head, you probably can't remember everything when you were young, right? So in my head, yeah. I can only remember watching a Chelsea versus Manchester United game. And I probably I think we beat them that day, probably between 2005 or 6. Then I was like, who are these guys? Like in my head, who are these guys? And it's so funny because red is my favorite color. So I don't know how I went to blue. And plus my dad was also a Chelsea fan, a big Mourinho fan, and very big one, because once Mourinho left Chelsea, he also kind of left Chelsea, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So that's how it all happened. And since then, Chelsea, I've been blue.
We're glad you switched over from the red side to the blue side, and we thank your dad for being a Mourinho fan, because that's what got you into being a Chelsea fan. And you know what? It's interesting because Jackie and I, who's my co-host here, Jackie and I also kind of started supporting Chelsea around that time, watching Chelsea against Manchester United, Arsenal, and growing up in Ghana. Both of us, we felt that. Not a lot of Chelsea fans at that time, so we wanted to be different, and what a journey it's been. What's your favorite player, manager that's been at Chelsea in the last 20, 25 years?
No matter how much I put it or sugarcoat it, it's still the special one.
It has to be.
I just have so much fun. It has to be him. Yeah, because as much as I've grown tactically and understood that probably, even though I love him, he is probably not going to be the best for us if he comes back. But I definitely have a soft spot for him. Like, it's definitely. Carlo Ancelotti is a big shout too.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great shout. And a lot of people focus on Mourinho, and rightly so, because he was the one that got us going and got us those first trophies. But in that first season under Carlo Ancelotti, I think we played the best football I've seen us play in a long time. And maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I know from your tactical analysis too, you'll support that statement.
Oh, 100%, Rob, 100%. We were decimating teams 7-0, 8-0. It was crazy.
It definitely was. How about a favorite player?
My favorite player, and he's actually my favorite player of all time, Eden Hazard. Michael Eden Hazard. Like, fully, closely followed by Drogba and Lampard. Because Drogba really, when I first started watching Chelsea, Drogba was everything to me at that time. Drogba was like my number one go-to. So until I met Eden Hazard, I don't even know how he managed to take Drogba off my top spot. But yeah,
those are great players and great shouts for maybe even the best player that's been at the club, Eden Hazard. I mean, when he first came in, I remember we'd won the Champions League and he put out a tweet. And to this day, soon, I can remember that I was sitting in a car driving from one place to another and the tweet came out and I saw it and I said, oh my God, Eden Hazard is going to be joining Chelsea. And since then, it's been, he's taken us to places that we didn't even know we could go as fans and as supporters of the club. A little sad that the way it ended his career with Real Madrid, but it would have been great to maybe have him back for at least a season. But unfortunately, that didn't happen.
Yeah, it was really sad. I almost at times, not like literally shed tears, but figuratively shed tears when he was at Real Madrid, because I was like, it's so sad for him to go out this way. But it's a circle of life. I'm happy that he actually ended his career so early, because of all the injuries.
Yeah, and as long as he's happy and he's enjoying his time with his family, that's all we can wish for him. So Sion, you mentioned your tactical analysis. You've grown over the last 20 years of watching Chelsea. How did you get into analyzing and looking at the game from a different perspective than a regular fan?
I've asked myself this question a lot too as well. And I like to say I started from Maurizio Sarri, but I would actually think back and go to Antonio Conte, the three at the back, because that was like new to us as Chelsea fans, right? It was a period where we just, the three at the back became in fashion because of Conte, used it with the Italian team at the Euro 2016. And I remember watching the Euro 2016, and I was like, because of I was a Hazard fan, I was a Belgium fan for that tournament. Yeah, so I tried to watch, and I was like, how good are these guys? Why are they playing Belgium like this? I think the game ended 1-1, or is it 2-1? 2-1 loss to Belgium, I can't remember. But I know they outplayed Belgium, and when he came to Chelsea, I became intrigued from that very moment. And when he came to Chelsea, he started with a 4-4-2? Yeah, in pre-season, he used it before he started with that in the season, 4-2-3-1. Then by the time he changed to that 3-4-3, we went on that crazy run, right? And I was like, wow. This is actually a very interesting system. And when we used it, I felt we were really good. The wing backs bombing up and down, that was really new to us then. And from there, I became really intrigued. Then we now got some crazy managers like Guardiola. Instead of putting fullbacks at the wing backs, he puts wingers there. But instead, that was like later on though. Then when Maurizio came in, before Conte left, I was actually, you would think I was looking for the Chelsea manager for Chelsea Football Club themselves, because I heard about him from Napoli. I was like, I knew Conte was really done. You know, it was a very toxic end. Yeah, so I was like, who is this guy at Napoli? Let me check him out. Let me see how. So I started watching Napoli videos, started watching how they play. I was like, oh my God, this is really interesting. This is fun. I like the way they play, one touch, two touch, and from back to front, playing out of, that's really when I started looking at, from him and Guardiola, playing out of the back, real, from that perspective, in depth, how they play out of the back. And it was very, very interesting. I really loved Jorginho too then, because, yeah, it was like the catalyst for that. And so I was following the games, following everything they did. And it was a very, very interesting first season. I know we didn't end up the way we wanted to end up, if you understand what I mean. But the first few games, the first few months was very interesting. And it was so beautiful that at the end, we could see Sarri's style of playing the Europa League final, really unsure. And as you know, Sarri left himself. That's like still one of the only Chelsea managers I remember that have left the club on his own terms. So even he still regrets that. So then Lampard came in too as well, but also Pep. Yeah, you can't displace the influence of Pep Guardiola, because when he changed that three at the back or 2-3-5, where two centre backs, then you have Walker almost entering into the midfield. Then you had it was before Zinchenko, it was Fabian Delph also came into the midfield, and Fernandinho was like that DM in between all of them, piecing it together. So with five attackers, Leroy Sané and Sterling on either wing, it was really, really very, very interesting to watch. And because of the patterns of play, De Bruyne, the half space crosses, it was wow. So like Pep really influenced my style of play. And also Tuchel, but so it's from really that Conte and Sarri, and that I will really put it to.
No, look, when I hear you talking about this, you can hear your passion for this analysis. You can hear your interest, your intrigue, and the fact that you just started by just watching games and saying, well, let me identify certain things along the way that help me see how these managers are trying to get their players to play. It really sets you apart, because you're seeing it not just as a fan, but you're also able to identify certain things that maybe I'm not able to see. And honestly, I was reading your thread from the Luton game, and I think this would be a good point to transition into that, was I'm like looking at it, I'm like, I noticed some of these things, but I didn't really pick up on them while I'm watching the game. But you picked up on them. You obviously put a thread out and have even the put out, I think, an article, right? So it really is very helpful for me as a fan to say, you know what, when I look at that whole game, I say, why couldn't Chelsea control it better? Why couldn't Chelsea be better? We were 3-0 up at 78th minute. Why did we make it so difficult? But then you see the analysis you've done and you say, actually, that makes sense. It makes sense that we were not able to press the way we wanted. We were not able to contain them the way we wanted. So let's get into that Luton review soon. For starting 11, any surprises? Nicholas Jackson on the left. Nani starts, which maybe not a surprise, but were you surprised Sterling didn't come back into it?
I was surprised, and I think it actually sent out kind of a statement, if you know what I mean. Because like Sterling missed that big chance against Wolves, and everyone was like, bench Sterling, Poch, if you don't bench Sterling, man, like, I won't take you seriously, things like that. So, and even for me, I don't like jumping on that bandwagon of bench this guy, for the coach is the coach, right? The coach chooses who he wants. But I felt like to send out kind of a message, especially if Nani didn't put out that performance he did in midweek, you could say, okay, Sterling, you can start. But for that to say, okay, I want to reward you with what you did. You're doing what I am telling you to do defensively, especially, because I know Poch has kind of a thing with Nani defensively. He cost our third goal. Is it second goal? Yeah, against Wolves. So he doesn't really track back as much. So when Nani came on, you could see the points he had to prove. And I was so happy for him that he started. And when he did, and he still rewarded him, like Poch, with a goal. So it kind of vindicates starting Sterling then. So he also gives us more options. It shows that we don't have to rely on Sterling only. And it was really nice.
Yeah, it definitely was. And I think for everyone that, said Sterling should be benched or Sterling shouldn't be at the club anymore in the heat of the moment, a lot of things are said. It helps when others step up, like you've said, with Nani coming back in. We hadn't seen Nani for a long time. We saw him against Wolves, and then he came back against Palace and got the goal. And that helps managers. I think you said it. It allowed Pochettino to say, you know what, Sterling, I can bench you because I have a player here that wants to continue to prove himself and take that spot. Because we, as Chelsea fans, were seeing Nani last season, towards the end of the season, coming through and maybe being one of the bright lights that in a very otherwise dull moment. And we wanted him to kick on from that. And we've come into the season. We haven't seen that, whatever be the reason, injuries or not working hard enough in training. We're now seeing that he's willing to do what it takes to earn that position back in the 11. And that honestly will help Sterling be better too, because he knows there's competition. Any other surprises for you? Nicholas Jackson on the left. We hadn't seen him there really, but overall, I think he put out a decent display from that position.
Mm. Yeah, 100%. When we saw Brewer and Jackson, there were flashbacks to the Wolves game, if you know what I mean. That, why are you doing this kind of thing? But, well, Jackson really puts a very good performance, because, you know, Jackson is really good on the half turn. Like, we probably don't see it as much, but this kind of game characterized it because of the way he was dropping deeper than he would normally have a striker, even though he does drop deep, and with the frequency of it. And he kept turning his man, and he gave that brilliant assist. There's something about Jackson that probably he knows how to turn. It's not as if we haven't seen it, but he probably doesn't give the end product after that really regularly, especially with the pass. He tends to hold on to the ball too long. So it was really, really refreshing to see him like immediately spot the pass and give it. I was like, wow, so you have this in your locker. Like, it was really nice to see from him.
Yeah, it was. And I think when you say when he drops deeper as a striker, when he does that, you need others around you to go ahead and open up the space for you to maybe turn and drive at the defenders. I think coming off of the left with Broya a little bit further forward, he knows that defenders, midfielders know that there's still an attacker behind them, so they can't immediately come and close him down, and that gives him a little more space to turn, at least in my opinion. And I think we judge Jackson on the goals, we judge Jackson on the misses, but there's a lot more to his game that I know you've analyzed and identified. I'd love for you to maybe touch on that, especially with the link-up and the build-up play that he brings to this team that, honestly, we are going to miss over the next month when he goes away with the national team.
Yeah, 100%. And it was when I actually started watching Jackson, trying to analyze his game, trying to put out a player profile piece in the summer. When I heard we're trying to chase Jackson, I was like, who is this guy? But it's not as if I don't like it, but yeah, let's say there's a popular player we want to sign. We already know his game. Yeah, it's quite, if he's a good player, it will be interesting and you're like, okay, I want him. But what is really pleasantly surprising, especially with the new directors and the players they bought over the past year, was that a lot of them, I did not know their game beforehand. There are players that probably aren't popular, like in the media, popular players. So they're all young. And so it was very interesting to see what Jackson could do. And I was pleasantly surprised, because I was like, he could drop deep. Very, very good on the ball, very technical, very fast. Apart from dropping deep, it's hard to see a striker that can drop deep and at the same time threaten in behind as frequently as he does. Because normally when you have all those strikers that know how to hold up the ball and bring their teammates into play, link up like Giroud or some big strikers that have it, they are probably not as fast or probably don't threaten in behind defenses like he does. So it was very, very good to see the mix, and it's very rare, and it's still rare for a striker in Europe. And when I saw that, I was like, wow, that I think this kid has the potential to be one of the best rounded strikers in Europe one day. And I think Poch has actually said something similar, even just after the first Luton game. And so you don't see this skill set from the striker so easily. And Jackson needs, and that's why he missed Nkunku for a lot of this season. Jackson needs associative play. He needs people or his teammates close by to him. So when he gets the ball, you know, he likes to flick it on. He likes to do back flicks and things like that. And he and Mudryk actually developed that in preseason. But the thing is that, you know, Mudryk didn't play as much. Sometimes Chilwell at the left wing started it. And also in the season, probably Mudryk does not get some consistency with injuries and stuff like that. And also another thing was there was no connector between them. Like there was Mudryk in the left wing, then Jackson all the way up as striker. So there was hardly any connection between them. But you could see when Nkunku came, just one game, you could see how Nkunku knitted the play together between them. The rotations, Jackson goes to the left wing, Nkunku replaces him, Mudryk is in the half space, and they were just rotating throughout that game. Like, I feel people didn't, I don't know why, it's one game, it's a little sample size, but I feel something, that piece of attacking sequence in that Palace game was what Poch wants. It's basically what Poch wants, because we saw that in preseason as well, and it's a shame that we haven't gotten to see that quite as much. Even though Nkunku has also been injured, a deputy in that left half space, Nkani, also got injured in the second game. It's really unlucky that we have been having those injuries this whole season. So Jackson really does that. And if there's another aspect to Jackson, like if we saw the chance he missed against Crystal Palace, he runs in behind, we haven't also seen those true balls to him as much, if you know what I mean. He was getting them a lot in preseason too. So someone like Enzo could help that now, because Enzo was playing behind him too close when Nkunku was gone. You know, Poch had to find a solution to that left half space, and he felt it was Enzo, but everybody was like, Poch, yeah, you're not really making Enzo play his game, you know, because you need Enzo to take the flow of the game from deep. And so Enzo wasn't getting enough space and time to throw and give all those true passes, all those switches of play. So I will Nkunku back and Enzo hopefully behind him. Definitely you can't displace the effects of Conor Gallagher, but it would be nice to see how Enzo also fits into this deeper. So once Enzo also comes back, I want to see all those through passes to Jackson. It would really be nice, because once Jackson gets all those chances. So Jackson, the thing about his weaknesses is that, like we see, he's not yet clinical. He's understandable for a young striker in Europe, 22 years old, who actually just started learning the striker position last year. Yeah, he was a winger throughout his so far two-year top-level career at Villarreal. And he was playing in a two-man strike force with Moreno when I watched him a lot. And he was coming on for Moreno as well. So, but when they play together, Jackson also drops like to the left wing in a way. He's playing the two striker force, but Jackson is roaming to the left a lot. So when he started playing lone striker at the end, that's when he had that real turn up in form that he started scoring a lot. So those are the things about Jackson. And Jackson also doesn't have that killer instinct yet. We saw a lot of the time when, as a striker, you know, we just need that slight open space. So once you get separation from your players, the defenders, just need that small space to just shoot. So Jackson will probably still try to dribble, try to still create more space. You know, do you remember Suarez, that Suarez needed like 20 touches to score? So I feel that when he grows, he can get to that level to discern when to be able to do that, like the goal is scored against Burnley, and when to just blast it, just create William, the way William, if you remember, William just shimmies and blasts it. That's something Jackson needs to learn on both feet.
I think you've analyzed Jackson brilliantly and way more than we've been kind of saying and doing, which is why isn't he scoring? And that is a part of the equation, but there's so much more to him. And I think you rightly pointed out that he's only been at the top level for 2 years now. He was at Villarreal 21. He started coming through last season, was kind of his first full season where he initially wasn't doing well and then started getting the goals. And then he comes to Chelsea. And it's easy to say that he should be scoring all the time, which he should because the chances are there. But he's come into the Chelsea team. He's learning about his players, his teammates. Nkunku was a big support for him, which went out. Carney went out. And so now he's had to adapt a little bit as well. But you can see that the potential is there and he is going to grow and mature and maybe turn into the striker that we eventually want. So Sion, I do have to ask you, a lot of people are saying we should buy a new striker, we should spend 130 million for another striker from Nigeria, from Africa, from Italy. If that happens, is that going to stunt the growth for Jackson? Is that going to prevent him from becoming the striker that we think he'll become?
That's a very good question, Rahul, because even I, earlier in the season, I was like, give Jackson time, give him the whole season. And I still believe that because you need a whole season at the top level in the Premier League to really understand. And he's lucky because you don't just get your time as a number nine at Chelsea, like almost unrivaled, because Broya was just coming from a very serious injury. Nkunku hasn't been around so far throughout the season. So Jackson really had no deputy to, and it was a blessing and it's also kind of a curse because it was a blessing for him to get game time, play. But, you know, Chelsea isn't a club that you will just start learning your trade. And yeah, it's mostly because the fans would definitely be on your back. Because if you miss just one chance, you know us, bro. If you miss one chance, that's really bad for you.
That's as a Chelsea striker.
that's it. You're gone. So that's the thing about Jackson. So he has to, what he will probably have to develop very well over the next coming months is that mentality of knowing how to block out criticism. I won't say constructive criticism because you need to let it in, constructive criticism and stuff like that. But mostly from your coach, right? Mostly from your players, your teammates. So don't let the critics, harsh critics, as are plenty in the English game, get to you, because as you need that mentality to succeed at Chelsea as a striker. So when you have that, but I feel. What also didn't help him was the fact that he was the only one and he didn't have an experienced striker to take off the load from him. So we started relying on him to score goals. So once you start scoring, especially with the way he started preseason, he already gave himself as someone that, very young striker with very high potential. So that's how we started preseason. So we kind of bought the hype a bit. so rightly so. But people that are realistic will know, obviously, as a young player, there will be teething problems. But everybody wants their player or striker to be Haaland. Everybody wants their striker to be Mbappe. That there's no downtime. There's no everything. Every game you have to score.
Yeah.
So... Exactly. So, but what Osimhen, I think as a big club, number one, you need two top strikers. You need two top strikers. As we see with Man City, Haaland and Alvarez. Now Haaland is available. Alvarez is playing. And you can see, it's not like there's a drop-off completely from Man City's style of play and what they're trying to do. So, we need two top strikers, and I really wanted Broya and Jackson to really show what they can so much that next season we won't think of buying a striker. But it's time to be realistic, right? Boya is coming from a long-term injury, and it's not going to be as easy for him to turn it up like that. It will still be inconsistent. And let's see what happens to the end of the season, though. But in my opinion, I still think in the summer we should think about Osimhen, because an Osimhen, first of all, is a top striker, one of the best strikers in the world. Obviously, my countryman. So, definitely. But I've been watching Osimhen for a long time, since the Under-17 World Cup. And he's had some problems along the way, but he's definitely currently fulfilling his potential. And there's a lot to come from him that we haven't seen yet, because you're playing in the Italian Serie A. You won the title with Napoli. That is quite unheard, because Napoli hasn't won the title for a number of years, decades. So that's something, that's a feat that can't be excused. So, but I think something with Africans is that you can't just, that's why people try to say you might not be able to adapt, but I feel Africans definitely, you're probably partly Ghanaian now, that we probably, they can play anywhere. They have the physicality, the pace to play anywhere, to play in any league, as you could see. So that, I don't think he will really struggle. But I think he will help Jackson to see somebody that is better than him, see someone that is a killer in the box. And there's no way you train with that kind of individual and you don't get better. That's what really helped. So Chelsea of the past years, Drogba. I saw Salah just say in a recent interview who had the most power in his shots? Is it Szoboszlai or Drogba? Is it Szoboszlai? He just mentioned Drogba. If you don't know how Drogba strikes the ball, so all those kind of things, they stay with you even as a young player. That especially someone with the mentality to learn, like Jackson, someone with the mentality to improve. So that really helps. So at this point in time, there's nobody in the Chelsea team that Jackson can look up to, that Jackson can learn from. He's 22. He's not yet an established striker. He has to learn, right? He's a young player.
Yeah.
Third season in the top flight. So you have to learn. So what helps is that you're training. Imagine he's training with Lewandowski. Imagine he's training with even Haaland or things like that, especially those that are killers, are strikers, because he's still learning the position. So that will really help him. And I think that's why we should still go for Osimhen in the summer. And even though he wants to keep Breuer, it will still help Breuer as well. But if we're being realistic, I don't know whether we'll be able to keep three strikers.
It depends on where we end up with Europe next season. But yeah, I do agree with you. I think maybe a loan spell for Breuer might be a better option, just to get him back into the fitness and the minutes that he needs. And then we evaluate from there his development and where he is. But no, I think your point is well taken, that Jackson is young. He does need maybe a more experienced mentor and competitor to say, I need to push myself a little bit more. I need to do things a little bit more. I need to release that ball faster instead of trying to dribble too much. Because if not, I have a Victor Osimhen or whoever we end up bringing in the striker position that's going to come in and take my position. And then it's going to be even more difficult for me to get back in. But we've spent a lot of time on the attack. I could talk to you about Jackson and some of the attackers for hours. But I do want to maybe transition into the defense and some of the issues that we've been having there this season. Post-game yesterday, there was a question for Pochettino in the press conference after the game, that someone noticed that we started going long, route one, or as they say, in England. And I think you noticed that too, which was something that kind of supported the question that came up to Pochettino. Was that a decision based on how the game was going, or is that a decision have Chelsea made that's what they want to do instead of build out from the back? So I'd love to get your take on that, And then maybe we'll touch on Thiago Silva at the end, shaking his head and being a little frustrated with the defense. But let's talk about maybe some of the in-game changes, like going long, that Pochettino and the team made.
You know, I like that question from the reporter, because we don't get those kind of questions from reporters in England. Like, especially if you watch the Spanish La Liga and Italian Serie A, they ask those questions regularly. They do. Because once you're not playing out of the back, there's an issue, especially if you're Barcelona, those kind of things. So for Poch, I think he has done that quite a few number of times. If you remember against Fulham this season, away at Fulham, where we won 2-0, he also allowed Fulham more possession, allowed Fulham to come to them. They didn't really try to suffocate Fulham as much as we do normally, try to press them high and things like that. So, it gave us space in transitions. You know, as we finished on the attack, one of the strengths of the attack, or one of Pochettino's style of play, is the transitions. We are transition kings, probably, would I say, this season, because we know how to play on the transition, either through, and we've seen some goals like that through us, we passing out from the back. I think we saw it against Man City. We saw some goals that we'll start playing out of the back, quick passes, and we're already in the opposition box. And we've also missed a lot of chances from those. So another way, we against Arsenal, so we did something like that. We allowed Arsenal more time of the ball. Then we started to come onto them in transitions. So you can do transitions through, you can execute transitions through passing out of the back, like I said. You can also execute transitions through long balls. Like, I remember the first game of the season for Manchester City. And if you look at the stats, Manchester City had less possession of the ball in that game. Why? If you watch the game, you will see immediately Ederson was launching balls to Haaland, straight route one balls. And it suited Haaland, because once the ball came, Haaland is already in behind like that, and it's a goal. And yeah, they ended up winning, is it 3-0 or 4-0 from that game. So it's not wise managers or good managers pick and choose their fights as well, because especially teams that away days against teams that are really tough. Luton has given Manchester City, Newcastle, Spurs, I can mention all the big teams, really tough times, and that's how they have been doing it. They really press hard on their opponents, really press hard, get really physical, and they're in their faces from the first minute. And you could see even our 3-0 did not stop them from trying to get back into the game. Set pieces, as much as everyone can say we have problems with set pieces, they also scored set pieces against every other team, because they are very strong at set pieces. So those kind of things really... So I noticed we only even did it once, to show you how it was a game plan, because you could say if you did it a few times and see that it didn't work, then you can then change the style to route one. You can say, okay, he tried this at the beginning and had to change the style in mid-game. But to show we tried it once and that was all. We started route one to Breuer. And Breuer actually made it stick. And from there, we were moving. But, you know, Raul, there's something I noticed too, as well, because you can say we didn't start our goal kicks from playing out of the back, but once we started the game, once we got some, we might pass it round, circulate, and we now get it back to the goalkeeper. Then from there, we will now be able to pass it out. From those moments, I realized we try to pass it out most of the time. When Newton tries to press us, we take it back to our goalkeeper, Petrovic, then that's when we are better at playing the ball out, if you understand what I mean. I think we are better at playing the ball out from after recycling then taking it back to your goalkeeper, then starting again, because there's a difference between that, because your opposition is not as settled and waiting for you. They're not waiting for you to start your goal kick, and they're already in position. There's a difference between being in position and getting into position when Chelsea circulate, take it back to the goalkeeper. And that's how we got our goals, because I remember the first goal against Palmer, they probably didn't show that moment in the game, because I think they were showing Pochettino that we now saw Palmer having the ball, then a long ball to Jackson in behind. Jackson went, tried to shoot and stuff like that. So when they did the replay, I saw the ball went from Petrovic to Silva, Silva to Cole Palmer, and straight direct in behind to Jackson. Then the second goal too, we won. I think we tried to circulate the ball too, the same way, going back to Petrovic. Then we now lost it at that sense in a way. Then Cole got it back. Boom, boom, boom. We're already in the final third. Madrake, what is Turner? So, and the third goal too as well, just straight ball. And there's sometimes we played it out. We had some chances too as well. So because we didn't score, you might probably not notice. So I think we actually tried to play out when we went back to our goalkeeper after recycling the ball. But that way, Luton won't be as settled trying to press us. So if not, if we're trying from goal kicks, a lot of the time Petrovic just launched it forward. And I think we saw that against Crystal Palace in a way too, because Jackson kept on making his stick as well, held the ball up, brought Nkunku and Mudrik into play. So I think Poch is not afraid to go long as well.
And you, I mean, I think you've said it very clearly. You have to have different tools in your arsenal, for lack of a better word, because it's not, if you can't continue to play the same way and expect it to work all the time. You have to do different things. You have to be able to mix it up so that when teams are facing you, they don't really know what to expect. And by the time they've settled to what you're doing, you do move on to something else. I think Pep Guardiola is the master of doing that, where he's always tweaking things and changing things and allowing his team to maybe express themselves in a different way. So, yeah, look, Route 1 isn't the fanciest way or the best way to play the game, especially these days. But if it's effective and it gets the job done and catches the other team out, and you're able to mix that up with shorter passing in between all of that, it's what you need to get the job done. And the other thing I noticed from Poch, and maybe you've noticed this way sooner than I have this season, is after we've conceded those two goals, him saying, let me throw on another defender and go five at the back, where I've seen Pochettino say, whatever we do, it's always going to be four. He accepted that that was what was required at that point to get the result. And that's what I want to see from the manager, is not sticking to your ways to the detriment of your team and saying, it's my way or we don't do it at all. Is being able to adapt. And I'd love for you to maybe share your thoughts on when he brings on Alfie Gilchrist. Maybe a little too late, but he eventually brings him on to say, let's see this game out and get those points.
Yeah, you're right. And people forget this, that Pep actually played five at the back in his first season at Manchester City at some points. I remember because we were... And Conte brought it into fashion, so every manager started implementing it, because especially against us, because we found out that the teams that match us, we found it harder to put those teams away later on in the season, or even in the next season, basically 2017-18. So lots of teams started to match us, five at the back at the same. So it was because normally. You know, five at the back gives that natural overload to a normal four at the back.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's always that extra man. So that's how it was. So Pep actually used that. I remember Leroy Sané starting at wing back, if you remember, a couple of times. I think he even played at wing back against Manchester United in that first season. So Pep actually did a lot of tweaks that season tried to find something that is workable now before he actually got his players and stuck to his system. So even Pep is flexible. So Poch, like you said, did the right thing in trying to bring on another defender, because what Luton was basically doing was overloading our back four, overloading them and finding that extra man on the wings. And they have really good crossers of the ball. I think their left back is their set piece taker. Is it Doogie or so? So every ball he had, he was just putting dangerous balls continuously. It was a nightmare. I went from being comfortable in my seat to almost being on the edge of my seat. Like, I was like, what is going on? So I was like, Poch, bring on a center back, please. Please bring on an extra, because what they were doing, apart from that, apart from finding space on the wings, Barkley, Chong, a lot of those players started running into the box, overloading the box. So we didn't have as much players in the box to defend them. So it was really very... So Poch actually needed to stay in a block, bring on Gilchrist, like you said earlier. When he did that, I don't think they score as much as they did or have those chances at the end.
Chances,
because you block, you move Colwyn into the middle, put Gusto onto the left, because I remember he was getting... Robert was brought a 1v1 winger. I've forgotten his name, but I know he was giving Cole problems when he came on in the second half. So if he brought Gusto earlier to that side to stop that, like he did for Olisey in the previous game, it would have actually stopped a lot of that onslaught from Luton.
Do you think those changes should have come maybe a little bit sooner and not when you and I were on the edge of our seats?
Yeah, honestly, I felt, looking in hindsight, that the changes could have come probably closer after our 3-0. It came at the 70th minutes, right?
Yeah.
Our third goal. That that Ozil versus Liverpool-esque. From Parma, oh my God. So, but then again, as fans, we tend to be emotional in game. So once we see a 3-0, we want, as a big club, knowing the times of pretty football, you probably want to keep possession, try to do things like that. So, if we brought on Gilchrist at that point in time, everybody would be like, oh, Poch, you're negative. What are you doing?
That is very true.
I think someone said this in a space I was yesterday, and I was like, wow, that is really true, because in the heat of the moment, Chelsea fans will probably not see it, especially we didn't see it against Palace, because when Poch brought on and put Gusto to the left, Gusto was bombing up and down the right throughout the whole first half, and it puts him on the left. Poch, you're a terrorist, Poch, things like that. So so we might not see the game as better as the coaches can, and that was a reminder for that. But I wish, yes, I think Poch did act slowly to bring on Gilchrist, because if he did, at least, even if you brought him on at the 80th minute, at least at that point, when Luton even got their goal disallowed, I felt that was a trigger. Just bring him on, see how the game, and like Mikel, reduce
it. the great Mikel. No, I think you've touched a great point about the emotional side of Chelsea fans and the reactions and basically wanting it to say, let's go 4-0, let's go 5-0. But as soon as they score one, as fans, we're like, why didn't we do this? And why didn't we close it out? And why didn't we see it through? So I think you're right. We should trust in the manager. And this actually transitions. I'd love to talk more about the Luton game and Caicedo and Thiago Silva, but I know we're getting closer to that hour mark. So I'd love to transition over to talk about Pochettino and what he's done in the last 6 months or 5 months that he's been here. And are you on the Pochettino in, Pochettino outside? Do you want to see him go through at least a full season and be able to work with these players? Because I have seen some improvement. Maybe it's not all across the board and maybe not all the players have gotten better, but I've seen some improvement. I've seen some results along the way that I can say, you know what? Let's give him the rest of the season. Let him continue to do the work, because bringing in someone new at this point is just going to restart the whole process. And that's not what we need. But I'd love to hear your side and what you've analyzed and seen from your perspective.
Firstly, like, we don't need to stick to the hour mark. We can just a bit, you can still ask more questions if you want. But
okay.
On Poch. So the thing with him is that I had some concerns. And when he was touted to be the next Chelsea manager, and even though I wanted him earlier, before even Potter, I had two options, Potter and Poch. So I wanted either one because of, number one, the kind of players we were buying, young players. And we know how Poch works with young players, how he has improved young players in the past at Spurs. Harry Kane, Dele Alli, Eriksen, that young team that grew together, that went up to the climax of the Champions League final. And so people have seen that. So we know that, yes, Poch can work with young players. So that's how we came. But my concern was, has Poch gotten with the times? Has he updated his style of play? Because Poch was a manager that uses two fullbacks that bomb up and down, like Danny Rose and Kyle Walker, if you remember at Spurs. That was his style of play. Very energetic. The wing backs, I'll call them wing backs because they do go up and down. So, and they had two midfielders that just sit in there, in Wanyama and Dembele, sometimes Eric Dier. So some of those things they're not fully outdated, but something like two fullbacks bombing up and down, it's quite outdated, if you say, because nobody really has two fullbacks bombing up and down. And I think the last coach to really implement that fully was Jurgen Klopp for Liverpool. That year, Trent and Robertson were like the fullback flavor of the year. So that's what I thought Poch had needed to at least know whether some players are better inverted. Inverted fullbacks became in vogue, as you know, because of Pep. So sometimes, and especially when you have wingers that like to hug the touchline. So like before Poch came, we knew we had Nani, we had Mudrik. So we had players that are good out wide, that can take the amount 1v1. So we had those kind of players. So, but if you play wing backs or full backs that actually bump up and down, they won't necessarily mesh so much with wingers that like to also hug the touchline. So you're not asking them to take on their man 1v1. You're asking them to receive inside. I remember Tuchel did the same with Ziyech. Ziyech was a player that, you know, likes to hug the touchline, then whip those dangerous balls. So, but instead, Ziyech started receiving the ball in the half spaces and trying to evade defenders, most of the time he spent it evading defenders instead of creating anything. Because once you're already there, you're already looking 360, trying to scan, ZH isn't the guy that when you give the ball to him, he will just on the half turn and turn his man and try and create a chance. That's not his game. So you want him to be facing his defender. The same way a lot of these 1v1 wingers are your Sakas, your Martinellis, your Sterlings at Man City, and Sane. You want them wide enough to be taking a man on. So I was concerned about that. How does Poch do that? So the preseason was interesting because he actually made one side of the winger being wide, the other side of the fullback bombing forward. We saw with Gusto, we saw with James, and probably on the left, Sterling might hug the touchline, or in the right, or Mudryk on the left. Then Gusto or Rhys James will hold the touchline too at the right. So, and he started implementing that famous 3-3-2-5, right? The famous 3-2-5, that if your team isn't playing 3-2-5, your team is not playing football, according to a lot of people these days. So, Poch also, and it basically stems from the term of football, or the school of thought of, in football, of positional play, jogo de posição, or as they call it, a positional play. So we had players, we bought players that can play a positional play kind of style, where you have everybody in different lanes of the pitch, really organized. If you have seen some of the articles on it, like I tried to read on a lot of times, even till now. So I think, so that kind of positional kind of play, Pep does it, like we know, and De Zerbi, all those kind of, I wanted to know whether at least Poch has updated himself on those kind of styles of play. And it looked like he did, because in preseason, it was really good to watch what we did, our style of play, the way we played out of the back, the way we sustained pressure, the way we linked up five men in the attack in all lanes of the pitch. So it was really nice to see. And the counter press, where's our rest defense? Our rest defense is probably the way you attack. You need some players really close to the attack, so that immediately you lose the ball, you have like as much as probably 3 to 5 players swarming the opposition team to collect the ball back. If you know the famous ginging pressing of Jurgen Klopp. So I saw a lot of that. So, and it really gave me hope into the season. And to be fair to Poch, the players that made it work in preseason could not start the season with him. So immediately he started to look at compromises and things like that. So there are a lot of things that Poch has done well. He has improved the attack. We haven't seen our attacker score this much in a long, long time. Even though, even cast our minds back to title-winning seasons, we probably see only, except probably under Conte last or so. Conte, who was the manager? Lampard. That we saw maybe Mount and Tammy amongst the goals, but nobody else. So, but now it's like all of our attackers are chipping in. Palmer, Jackson, Sterling. The defense actually started so well. The defense started so well early in the season. So, but the defense gradually became really bad. Gradually became really bad. We have conceded 31 goals so far this season. That's really worrying. So I feel we were solid in the beginning of the season because we were very compact. We were very compact. So we didn't allow spaces. We were pressing harder than we're pressing now. So because the trade-off of Poch's system actually take advantage of you in the wide areas and putting crosses or 1v1. So, but when you press, you hardly allow teams to take advantage of it, because even Man City had Man City had deficiencies over the years defensively, but Man City's press and the way they suffocate teams, the way they counter press, get the ball, have 90% of the ball. So if you have the ball, you can't do anything to us. That's how it is. So I saw a lot of that this season. So I'll just a lot of the principles have died down in a way. But there are a lot of injuries, Raul. Like a lot, we could say injuries are excuses. But when it's as much as Chelsea's, I don't think it's an excuse anymore. And when it has been happening for such a long time, I saw one stat about injuries, up to 100 injuries since last year. Like,
it's crazy.
It's crazy. It's definitely crazy. So that we have almost a full XI of players injured every game. So, and it doesn't help with continuity, really.
Right.
So that's why I feel Poch needs that time to be able to, and is improving the young players. Is improving Mudryk. Mudryk does not look like the player he was. Well, after the Liverpool game, per se, but because it looked really interesting in that first game. So before you knew it, the Chelsea, everything, it was looking like a very raw player, very is this guy 62 million? Is it so? Well, the consensus was, is he 100 million? So, but Poch has really improved. We can see Mudryk improving game by game. You can see him coming out of his shell. You can see him settling in his environment. He's improving his game constantly. So Poch is really going to, and see, as well as much as I've criticized Poch too for Nani, in hindsight, that's why I said, like, coaches know what they're doing more than us. In hindsight, it looks like Poch had an end goal for Nani. He knew what he wanted from Nani. He knew how to provoke that from Nani. And Nani has responded in fashion, because you could see that people felt the relationship between them was really poor. But as we saw after the Crystal Palace game, that the way two of them spoke on the field and the way Poch spoke after, that, you know, Poch has been giving Nani the tough love.
Yeah.
The tough love kind of. And with Mudryk, he has actually given him a softer kind of love, a more fatherly kind of arm around the shoulder. Yeah, and it's really interesting the way he decided to know how to handle them, because you can understand Mudryk, that he's coming from a situation of war in his country, his family, friends are in Ukraine with everything happening, and he's not someone at that point in time that will need a tough kind of love, because he's emotional. He's already in that emotional period in his life. So it's now that you understand why Poch puts an arm around him, say, I'll give you time. I'm not, I don't criticize you. I give you trust publicly. And in training, you see all those pictures of Poch holding him, arm around his shoulder. It's really nice and refreshing to see. So in my head, I was like, why aren't you doing this for Nani? so I was like that. But at the end of the day, Nani likes to be challenged. Nani likes to be challenged. Nani likes challenges. And when you give Nani a challenge, Nani does not shy away from it. He does not, he has that mentality to, I want to be the best. I want to do that. I want to learn this. I want to be the best. I want to play. So Poch played on that willingness of Nani to play, improve, and everything like that, to make Nani work for his spot. Especially to Poch was like, Nani, you're a good player. You have skills. We need your skills in the team, but you're not doing what I want from you defensively. Because I've noticed a lot of times he came on against Arsenal, and Arsenal scored their last goal almost immediately because he didn't really track Saka that much, that well, and Saka put in the cross that Trossard scored. And other times you see that from Nani, that he probably, the application of defensive work isn't as much for him. So Poch really played on that, and immediately he came against Crystal Palace. He was defending like a fullback. He was really defending like a fullback against Luton Town. There was one ball that came in across from the right from Townsend, and Nani was there to head the ball away. I don't know if you remember that moment.
Yeah, no, so look, it's been No, I was just gonna say it's been refreshing to see Nani come back in, and we know what he can do in the attack, but for him to come back and help out on the defensive side is only going to help him be better as a team player versus an individual.
100%, 100%. I agree with you, Raul. So when we now come to the ball, that's with Poch with the youngsters. So when you now come to the side of Poch's style of play and some, you know, well, I've had issues with him misprofiling some players in the team. Yeah, puts Chilwell as a left winger. I understood the reason for that at the against Liverpool, because he was trying to stop Trent, and it really did the job on him. Chilwell, it didn't later in the game, like we couldn't even see Trent again in the game. So, but and I think there was a reason for him playing Chilwell there at that period in time. I think he felt Mudryk wasn't ready to start consistently. I can understand that. So, but the one that really has gotten on my nerves a lot this season has been Enzo, has been the use of Enzo Fernandez. Also, like, as much as I've gotten angry with Poch, I also see why he tried it. Like, you know, Mudryk, Nkunku and Kani were not available, so we needed someone in between the lines, and I can understand you wanted Gallagher and Caicedo's dirty work out of possession to be able to cover for the team deeper, but we just realized that Enzo started flying through games, if you will. Like, you might not see Enzo taking as much touches as he should, conducting games as he should when he's deeper. I remember most of last season when Enzo came into the team, Enzo was having almost his best game every game. Every game, Enzo, like, we might lose, but Enzo was still one of the best players on the pitch. So, because he was there to dictate the flow of the game, spray those balls, left, right, give assists, more assists, because he has more time when he's playing deeper. But even when we realized that and he started playing Enzo and Caicedo together, we could also see there was an improvement in the way we built up. There's an improvement in the way we play out of the back. But I also realized there was also the trade-off defensively, because Enzo won't be able to track runners as well as Conor Gallagher does. So I now understand why he actually brought Enzo back forward in that sense. But I want to see now, because I don't want to just make a judgment on that now until Nkunku and Enzo playing the team, if you understand. So,
yeah,
because in that sense, Enzo would definitely have to be deeper, and Nkunku, Jackson, or a striker, then Enzo plays deeper. I just thought about a fear now, because Jackson is going for the AFCON. So I don't know whether Nkunku will play straight as a striker now because of that. And we might still see Enzo in those zones. So I think that misuse of Enzo has really been really not been good so far. And a lot of the times I've noticed, because Poch likes his transitional play, people say he doesn't have a style of play. That is not true, because the way we transition from back to front quickly, that is how Poch wants to play. And we've done it multiple times, created chances from it. That we see a lot of missed chances from us. I think we're leading the league in missed chances, 36 or 7. So how would you say we have those amount of chances and you say the manager has no style of play? That's ridiculous in my opinion. So, but the question now is, does the style of play fit the team? Does it fit Caicedo? Does it fit Enzo? Because you have two players that like to play the ball, like to have multiple touches of the ball, like to circulate the ball, like to be in control, controlled games. If you notice, I remember Jorginho. You know, with Jorginho, you cannot play a transitional style of play, because you, in that sense, you lose the ball a lot, and Jorginho will have to defend open space, and it won't suit him because Jorginho isn't fast enough to defend open spaces. So something like that applies for Enzo, but Enzo has the trade-off of being so exceptional on the ball and in his passing. So you want to utilize that. So with Enzo, you want him to have multiple touches of the ball, 100-plus touches each game, 100-plus, because the more he has the ball, the more ingenuity he has to be able to pick those passes and get you up the pitch, create chances for the team. Then Caicedo, too, at Brighton, he also had multiple touches of the ball as well, because he also likes to keep it short. As much as people compare Caicedo to Kante, they are so different. They are so different because Kante has more energy, more is more mobile than Caicedo. Caicedo is more technical than Kante because Caicedo knows how to do one-touch passes, especially one-touch forward passes. If you saw the way we scored the goal, Nani's goal, that those 1-2, that Caicedo's one-touch pass, boom, straight into the path of Cowell. So those kind of balls, Caicedo, you want him and Enzo to be controlling games. Lavia, the same thing. Lavia needs touches of the ball. He needs to feel the football, things like that. So we have those midfielders that fit that positional kind of play. And as much as we still hold the ball, Poch likes his team to be direct. So does Poch, the question is now, does Poch balance the need to be direct and with the need to hold possession of the ball? Does he balance it for the sake of those players? Because as much as they're not slouches defensively, once you start having that transitional, losing the ball, there will be gaps in your midfield. There's no way. We saw it even yesterday. We saw it a lot of times against Brighton, against Manchester United, against Man City, that especially because Caicedo is not a Rodri that can sit deep, that is best sitting deep. Caicedo is an eight, like we say. He's more of a roaming player, and that you will want beside another DM, a sitting defensive midfielder. But Caicedo too can play it. So that's what he's doing now. He's actually kind of sacrificing the way for the team. And what will be best use of him is even beside a Lavia that is more adept sitting back. Because Lavia loves to sit. Lavia is very positionally aware. As we even saw it against Crystal Palace, he came on. And it looked as if he has been playing with us for a while, because he knew where to be at each point in time. That's a DM there, a defensive sitting defensive midfielder. So a lot of people, a lot of my friends, a lot of I don't like calling them tacticals, like you say online, but a lot of my friends that really are into tactical analysis too, a lot of them feel that in the long term, Poch might not be that guy to take Enzo Caicedo's game to that next level. But for now, he can be that guy to be able to improve some of their deficiencies. They even see Cowell. Cowell is not a left back, but he's learning a lot from just being at the left back position. He said it himself. So a lot of these guys, Enzo is running more than he has ever run in his life. So as much as that, like, those kind of experiences help those young guys, because you can't just have it all easy throughout your career in that sense of not having challenges, adapting to new style of play. So I would like that from them. They will learn from it, but you also want to put them in their best environment to succeed. So I don't know whether long-term Poch will be that guy to make us play like a Pep Guardiola team, a really highly technical possessional team, because we are technical as a team now. The technical base of the team is exponentially levels that we have seen in years. Can we leverage on that? We need a manager that can really leverage on that, because we have the tools to dominate teams, like to hold the ball, make 1,000 passes, things like that. So why Poch likes his team to go direct? So those are those are the things that we're looking at. Those Poch is good for the now. It's really good now for the team because young players still trying to find their feet. And Poch is very experienced at that. You improve players. But I don't know whether Poch is that guy to take us to that level of a top team, consistently challenging with the kind of players we have, though. If we got more players of, if you had Tchouaméni at the base, if you had all these physical, even technical, physical players that suit transitional football, like, you know, the way Klopp is, Klopp's team.
Yeah.
Is, if I put Pochettino in that team, like, I would say Pochettino is that guy for them in that kind of sense.
That squad.
With the kind of players. Yeah. And you wonder whether the directors of football actually still planned this in the onset, because Pochettino got an 18-year contract. I mean, 18-month contract.
18-month, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe they wanted him to stabilize, raise all these young players, to improve them, then probably moving on at the end of the day, because I feel because we can see the disparity between what Poch wants and what the directors built the team to be, if you understand. So are the directors saying, is this, we want Poch now, then we want someone else later? Is that what they're saying? Because it sure looks like that. Because you know what Pochettino was like when you brought him in. So you can't just say we brought a different coach of different style of plays to the team you assembled. So I think that's something we're looking at in the future.
I think that's a great point right at the end with the length of the contract. And I mean, we've seen it with Pochettino over his career with Tottenham, where he took them. I mean, he took a young group of guys all the way to the Champions League final, and maybe in a different instance would have won it, which for Chelsea fans, we're happy they didn't. But you can see that he can help players grow and develop. And then someone else can maybe come in, and maybe it's Pochettino, who knows, at that point, that he can continue and adapt and change his game a little bit to take us forward. But I love the analysis of Pochettino. I love the insight and the input that you've brought to this segment. I know we're now over the hour mark, and you said that was fine. But I don't want to keep you for too much longer. It is New Year's Eve. I know you want to go out and celebrate and enjoy the last day of the year. So let's just do a quick maybe player of the season, your signing of the season, goal of the season so far for Chelsea. And then who do we bring in January that you think may help us for the rest of the season as a signing as well? So let's start with player of the season so far for you.
Before this game, it should have been easily Conor Gallagher. Easily Conor. But I really think Palmer has leapfrogged Conor by reason of the way he was just dispatching his goals last game against Luton. So those goals were like, we knew Palmer had ball striking, but most of his striking has been curling the ball, not really harassing the ball more than hitting through the ball. But we finally saw Palmer hit the ball, pure strike, through the ball. And I was like, yes, this is the Palmer that has arrived. That kind of thing. So, and we saw that beautiful second goal. Oh, my goodness. What do you think about that goal, Raul?
Honestly, I did not expect that kind of composure, that kind of calmness in front of goal. Because I'm used to us just rushing it and trying to score as soon as possible, but he basically just walked it into the net. I know it wasn't a walking motion, but the awareness, the ability to bring the ball in his path, to cut it back over, to bring it back over, and then right at the end say, you know what, instead of taking another touch, I'm going to put this in the net because there's a lot of defenders around me. it was refreshing to see, and something that, like you said, we knew he could do, but he chose the right moment to show us that he can do it. And so it's for me, at least, if you want to give player of the season to Conor and signing of the season to Palmer, that's totally fine with me.
Yeah, so, but you're right. Like, that really fits the bill so far. So, but I would just give Palmer, because he just edged it just now. Palmer, player of the season, then signing of the season. There's no other contender, really, for signing of the season.
So both for...
so, for both. But huge shout-out to Connor as well, because Connor came from a place of nobody really wanted him to start. And because of the talents that we have that are better than him, even the club now, I don't even know what they want to do with him, basically. Because rumors upon rumors that he's going, and nobody's coming out to dispute it. So that's really worrying in that sense, that there's no source that said the club wants him to stay, things like that. You know, at least we have that one source, even though it's not a tier one, as we say it on Twitter. So, but that we just hope at least he can finish the season with us. Because I feel you need every hand on deck at this point in time, because your team is not yet settled, your team is not yet what he wants to be. So every player that you want, Liverpool fans actually hated Henderson for a long time, as the way Gallagher came up here. And at this point, Henderson ended up becoming a cog in their title-winning endeavor for Liverpool. So the fans don't always dictate what happens at clubs. The player does, because it's an initiative. He's one of the captains. So, yeah, so I'm happy for Connor in that sense. So that's, I just hope he keeps it going.
Yeah, me too. And honestly, I feel like he's underrated by a lot of Chelsea fans, because they expect so much more from him, and he does a lot of the other things that they don't notice. And he's also a young guy. I mean, we've spoken about Connor on this podcast a lot, but he's a young guy. He's been given the captain's armband. He's been kind of thrown into a position of leadership, and given the responsibility of being that academy player that cares and drives for the club. And he does all of that. It's just, like you said, I think some people just tend to identify certain things and pick on that and want him gone. But if he does leave, I think that'll be a big loss for Pochettino and for the squad. But not getting too far into the Connor discussion, what's your, I guess your goal of the season is the Palmer goal of this, the against Luton.
I'm literally struggling to remember any other goal right now, because that goal really had me on edge. I think some goals this season have really been good. I don't know whether it's still a debate whether Mudryk meant that Arsenal goal, but that was pretty a Zappa Costa-esque goal too as well. I don't know any other goals. Palmer has scored. Sterling scored a beautiful goal. A solo goal, yes. Yes. A solo goal against Luton earlier in the season. And that was really good as well. Nobody has really scored any goal that can really rival Palmer too as well. So I think I'll give it to Cole. And Jackson's goal against Burnley, I remember that was a good goal as well. That was
the cut back,
that was a really good goal as well. So, but I think Palmer does take it.
Palmer is shining in this segment. Any players? I know we're now a day out from the new or the transfer window, and Pochettino has spoken about bringing new players and said he will be more involved this time around. If there was one player soon that you think that comes in and walks into this team, this first 11, and improves it right away?
Right away. A player that can come into this team and improve it right away is, I think, Gueye. Gueye can come into this team
From Crystal Palace.
Because from Crystal Palace.
Okay.
I don't I'm wary to say someone like Diomande, because Diomande is also like the flavor of the month player for Chelsea. A player that Chelsea fans want. So but in the sense of the word, I would say a commanding centre back. an aggressive center back that can close his man, that can dominate his man. So we need someone in that area. So any dominating center back that comes into the team instantly improves the team. That's why if Fofana, like a fully fit Fofana, steps into this team right now, oh my goodness. Like you a lot of things will change, because I noticed the Sassi and Silva, they are not necessarily center back. I can understand Silva. Silva is in the twilight of his career. Like he's more concerned about what is behind him than right. What is in front of him. But disaster, yeah, and he's a covering center back. So he knows how to sweep and be the last man. And disaster too is like that. I notice a lot of the time, disaster would rather be also concerned about what is behind him than trying to close his center back, because he's trying to be safe. It's just the nature of how he defends, though. Because we all know that, I mean, I'm a center back by trade as well. A lot of the time I'm being told, once my partner is sweeping behind me, I have to close the striker. I have to close the distance between my, because I have to give him no space to turn, give him no space to just run at me. So those are like fundamentals of a back two, of a back four, of two center backs.
A partnership, that's the dynamic. Yeah.
A partnership, exactly. That's the dynamic. One holds, one sweeps, while the other engages. So that's what we kind of lack. So a dominating center back will help too. And obviously, Victor Osimhen walks straight into this team. he improves the team 100%. So those are, and something that might not be talked so often is probably a sitting defensive midfielder. We have that in Lavia, so I wouldn't say we need
just
to buy.
Just have to stay fit.
just have to stay fit.
Yes, no, I mean, there's a lot of pieces here that we'd like to see. Lavia is one of them. That once we have a team that's not just riggled with injuries, Pochettino can call upon and use and build chemistry and a partnership, like you're saying, amongst everything. I think we have the pieces. They just need to gel and be given the time to gel. But this is Chelsea. Time is the one thing you don't get. So, Sion, you've given me a lot of time. I appreciate it. We're coming up to an hour and a half. Any parting thoughts from you? Anything that you want to share? Where can people find you online and learn more about you?
Firstly, I want to just appreciate the time, Raul, because I know you have been trying to get me on, and I really appreciate that. Even at when my account got bagged, it was during that period, so I was still trying to get back to you, so I really appreciate it. And I hope for a better 2024. Pray for a better 2024 for both of us, for the pod too as well. I like speaking on pods. I like podcasts because you have more time to actually articulate your thoughts than just a tweet, because a tweet you have to summarize everything, things like that. So, and it's good to build relationships as well, for nice people. And so I really appreciate that. The listeners can find me at Sheun Mobology. That's my Twitter handle, at Sheun Mobology. If the spelling, you might not easily get it, but
we'll add it to the episode. But if you want to share the spelling, you can, and definitely do that.
Yeah, no problem. At SEUNMOBOLAJI. So SEUNMOBOLAJI as my name. So. And I heard you're from Ghana, so you lived in Ghana, so I'm really intrigued about that.
Yes. So Jackie and I started this podcast about over 3 years ago. We both grew up in Ghana. We went to high school in Ghana, and then we moved to the U.S. for college. And so we've been Chelsea fans for over 20 years. It started while we were in Ghana. And I actually spent some time in Nigeria too. So we can talk about that offline, but let me just close this out so that it doesn't go too far much longer. But soon, it's been a pleasure. You're welcome back anytime. I think your analysis and your input would be greatly appreciated and liked by our listeners. So maybe we can talk about bringing you on more often. But for now, that wraps it up, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Please continue to subscribe, like, and follow us at The Premier Chels on all podcast providers and at The Premier Chels Pod on Instagram and Twitter. And we will be back with a new episode, but Happy New Year, hoping and praying for a better 2024, maybe with a trophy. But until then, stay safe and up the Chels.
Hey guys, the Premier Chels is sponsored by Kickoff Coffee. They are a top quality artisanal roasted coffee. In other words, they're Champions League winner and Premier League winner every single time. They deliver fresh bags directly to your home, so you don't have to go to a coffee shop and pick up something. And the best part about them is every bag gives back to soccer charities. 10% of the proceeds go to organizations that use soccer to promote youth social development in the underserved areas. Use our code TPCoffee15 to get 15% off your order. You can order at kickoffcoffeeco.com or check out the links on our social media. Thanks.